What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna mix it, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. Welcome to Out There. It's Wednesday, June 28th. Today's show was actually recorded last week. Last week, Dwayne and I were in the studio, and we thought we were doing a live show. And then 40 minutes into the supposedly live show, Johanna calls from the Who Does the Radio Station stuff. And she was like, hey, your automated show is playing yet another time. And I was like, dope, forgot to press the live studio button. Anyway, so fortunately, I had recorded the whole show. So what you're going to hear today is what was actually done last week. So I hope it's not too confusing with dates and people and places. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to Out There.
The next 10 minutes, the first 10 or 11 minutes of the show is me and Dwayne talking about some challenges with the Housing Authority. And then there's an interview with someone that I met on the bus in North Carolina and Virginia who works at the cat litter factory in Virginia, being a trash hauler. I thought that was interesting to hear more about that part of the industry. And then there's also, at the end of the show, there's my niece from Virginia telling the story about how she caught a fox with her bare hands.
Enjoy the show. Dwayne Rainey. This is Out There, and I'm Ruthie Woodring, and you heard Dwayne the dog barking.
Dwayne the dog, Rainey, the host of My Generation every Friday from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, music from the 70s. Tune in.
All right.
To tune out.
So I was out of town for a few weeks, and so I missed Juneteenth. Last Monday, June 19th, was Juneteenth. Juneteenth is an annual observance to celebrate the date that Union soldiers enforced the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing all remaining slaves in Galveston, Texas, on June 19th, 1865. Texas was the last state in the rebellion following the end of the Civil War to allow enslavement. And even though the rumors of freedom were widespread prior to this, the actual emancipation wasn't announced in the last state practicing enslavement until General Gordon Granger came to Galveston, Texas, and
Go Gordon.
Yeah. He issued General Order Number 3 on the, quote, 19th of June. I don't know why that's in quotes, but it was almost 2.5 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed
the Emancipation Proclamation. What were the first two orders? Listen up, I'll kick your...
I don't know. Wait, it's recognized as a state holiday or a special day of observance in 45 states, the District of Columbia, and the U.S. Congress. And it should be recognized as America's second Independence Day because Americans of African descent were trapped in the tyranny of enslavement during the 4th of July. Can you imagine everybody around you celebrating Independence Day and you being a slave? All right. So for today's show, I have a mix of things. I got an essay on the meaning of life. It's only 2 pages. Doesn't get too deep.
Keep breathing. Have a good time and keep breathing.
Yeah, and don't forget to smell the flowers.
They're pretty nice on the bike path today.
Yeah, did you notice anything in particular?
Just, what is it?
Honeysuckle. Did you smell the honeysuckle by Chestnut Street?
Yep.
Have you smelled the catalpa?
Yep.
Catalpa's in full bloom right now.
That must be what it is. I know it's some kind of tree flower.
Yeah, there's another hedge, a green hedge, with little tiny little white flowers that smells really good, too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it's called. Privet or something.
They cut the one down at where I live.
Yeah, right. They cut down the current bushes. Yeah, I saw this in the paper, the Gazette. Well, Dwayne, you told me about it when I was in Kentucky a couple of weeks ago about how the Housing Authority is making people take down their gardens. They came and cut down the currant bushes outside your apartment.
That was the pruning committee.
Well, we had these currant bushes that we'd planted like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They were like all loaded with fruit, and we ate from them, and they just, what happened?
These people just came through and decided, oh, those don't need to be there. I was gone. Otherwise, I would have been there protecting. I would have tied myself to a bush.
No.
But I wasn't. But I had this bad feeling after I noticed that they had trimmed two lilac trees, just like a bush. It was all rounded, and I could see where they maybe did one because of the lighting. But the other one, it was just these people didn't know what they were doing. So I called the housing authority, the maintenance department, and she goes, well, you'll have to lodge a complaint. I said, those bushes have been there for the past almost four years.
At least.
And they decided to cut those down. They weren't like next to the building. But I know prior to when I see them in action in one building, I went out because I have some golden raspberries, and I have it kind of like bricked, some flat bricks that I found. Uh-huh. And so I cut it away from the building like about a foot and a half, some of them, just so they didn't go through there with a weed whacker and say, oh, look at these. And then other things, like the building right next to me, my neighbor Jenna, she was out there trimming one of her tree bushes that's out there yesterday because they just stopped. They went through and created some havoc in a couple of buildings. And I guess I got a few complaints. Huh. I'm like, these people need to be educated on what is like a weed. They give them a weed whacker and a hedge trimmer. Say, go for it. And they don't know what they're doing. They did this a couple of years ago after Claire Clifford took office. A year and a half ago, they went through and just started slicing anything that was within 2 feet of any building. They just cut.
The rhododendron, the lilacs.
It didn't matter. They were just, yeah. I mean, I think that lilacs you're supposed to take maybe a third.
Yeah.
If you're going to trim every other year. So last year they hacked the back.
What do you think can be done on the education and advocacy front?
Well, you're told to, you have to make a complaint. And it's like, wait a minute. That's going to go about as far as nowhere.
Get lost in the bureaucracy.
Yes. Oh, we didn't get it, stamped it. We have bigger fish to fry or whatever. And then they came out with this.
This, Dwayne's pointing to the paper where they're saying that you can't store anything.
June 12th.
You can't store anything on your porch.
So we have these porches. And where I live, we have these nice screened-in porches. You know, keep the mosquitoes out. And so, yeah, people put things out there.
Like a chair to sit in?
Yeah.
Like a table?
No furniture. No furniture. So we're just going to go stand on the porch. You know, some people have some pretty nice porches.
Yeah.
Like mine is pretty nice. I have a table out there that I keep a bunch of plants on that I've inherited and produced. And, well, not produced, but I am not a bee. I'm a dog.
You've tenderly,
I propagated.
Yes, yeah.
All right. So I was concerned about that. Mm-hmm. Bikes. Keep a bike inside the building. Oh, but we can't keep it inside the building, and we can't keep it on the porch.
So what are you supposed to do?
Because it might get stolen. So they're going to build a bike rack over towards the Salvo house on the edge by the parking lot. I am not going to keep my bike there. It's like, what? So what was it? A woman that used to take in, and she was on the little committee in her...
Joyce?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She got money for residents to do gardening.
They gave her money.
To do gardening to take care of the green space around their apartment.
She dug a couple of gardens. She dug a garden out by the clothesline. And people got, you know, hey, we were encouraged before Clary came in to beautify around our building. Currant bushes, comfrey.
Rhubarb, and the raspberries.
Yeah, so, I mean, not that I was in this for the money, but people are like, oh, okay. It kind of gave a green light to take and help. I mean, if you look out your window, you know what you want to see, something nice, or you don't want it to look like barren.
Yeah, I mean, it gave people some ownership over the space where they live.
Right, and so then they're saying, now, some porches, yeah, are they cluttered? Yeah. Some places, yeah, I guess, not where I am particularly, because it's pretty much adult living, but like Hampshire Heights or Florence Heights, there can tend to be some clutter, but to blanket and say, nobody can have a garden, or nobody can have and put nice things outside of their apartment to make their house, you know, where they live look comfortable.
Yeah. Well, you also had like a lawnmower, a real mower.
Yeah.
Too, that you were using for a job. Like, how are people supposed to store anything that might be work-related?
I got it out of there. I mean, the way they were going through it, just like, it was pretty gloomy.
Yeah.
That day, it was just like, I was doing, a route for pedal people. And I saw this truck from Northampton Housing pulling in with like plastic toys and mattresses and stuff. And I'm like, oh. And I get this sick feeling from just seeing that, saying, oh, good thing. Because the day before, I got rid of anything that I didn't want to take and lose.
You put in a storage?
Yeah. Up at my uncle's house, I rode all the way out to Sylvester Road from downtown Northampton. 7 miles.
Yeah, because fortunately you had a bike trailer on your porch, too.
Yeah. With the pedal people signs. Yeah. So...
Some stuff needs to go, but there should be some middle ground and some more like advanced warning or something. The thing with the gardens, or like in terms of what can be done, well, I know that sometimes tenants are afraid to speak up or afraid they'll be evicted if they speak up. But when it came to that light, that crazy bright LED light that they put that shone right into your bedroom window,
I got the city ordinance. I gave them a letter with a couple of signatures of the people that were in my building about putting a shield on that. And now I'm not just doing that to complain, but if they want people to comply with rules and regulations, then they've got to comply with rules and regulations. It's a two-way street.
That's a good point. All right, so... Oh, yeah, for the rest of today's show, we'll see how much more time we have, how much we end, like, yakking. By the way,
what you said you wanted me to do.
Come in here and talk.
I could just bark yes or no.
So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and Dwayne Rainey is in here, too. So other stuff on today's show that I might play if there's time. My little essay on the meaning of life from my perspective. And when I was traveling the last couple of weeks, I went to Kentucky and Virginia and North Carolina.
Again,
not a big deal. I go there a lot for my family. I have a clip from a woman I sat next to on the bus going from Durham, North Carolina to Richmond, Virginia. She told me about her job on the factory line making cat litter. Now, if you've listened to this show before.
I hate cat litter. Not just because it's a cat.
If you listen to the show before, you'll know how much that is a waste hauler. We despise clay cat litter.
little kibble and bit containers of fancy pieces. Like, you know there's going to be 50 pounds of cat litter
coming
in that
next.
One.
Anyway, so to hear someone else's experience with it at a different stage of the process was interesting to me.
Yeah, because they're making money on making waste.
Yeah. And at the end of the show, I'll play my niece from Virginia, my niece Christina, telling how she happened to catch a fox with her bare hands.
All right, Christina.
Yeah, actually with her dress. So here it is.
What'd you do, take your dress off and throw it on the fox?
Exactly. Don't give it away. Give it away. We'll get to that. They got to listen to the end of the show to get there. Foxy lady. All right, so what makes a life meaningful? I wrote this yesterday. So I'm feeding cans and bottles into the redemption machines at Liquors 44 and wondering if it's the best way to spend my time. I'm thinking about a former coworker who has gone on to grad school for appropriate technology to learn to make and distribute biogas digesters or something. That must be meaningful, I think. He's furthering his education, and he's going to actually do something. Help develop this simple, efficient technology that will improve people's lives and make the world a healthier place to live. I cash in my deposit receipts at the counter. I made $8 in deposits this week, and I get on my bike and trailer to start picking up trash. What makes a life meaningful? I love riding my bike. I can't think of any other job I'd rather be doing. Motorists pass me on Route 9, windows open to enjoy the sunshine. I see a couple of drivers with a cupped hand out the window catching the breeze. I smile. My entire body is catching the breeze as I bike. Is a pleasurable life meaningful, as long as you're not destroying anything in the process? Is the point of having a life that feels meaningful so that it will be more pleasurable? If I have achieved a life that is adequately pleasurable, does meaning come from helping others achieve a similar standard? I think so. That's my philosophy of life. The point of life is to enjoy it and to live so that others have a fair chance of enjoying it too. Live simply so that others may simply live. So that people have basic needs covered. Food, water, shelter, love. Love. Community. Interconnectedness. Acceptance.
And it goes on.
Studies show that people who have unhealthy habits, like smoking and eating unhealthy foods, but have strong social ties, live longer than people who eat healthy foods and don't smoke, but aren't as connected to friends. I mean, look at Dwayne here. Prime example. I think many of the desperate things we do in search of connection are what are destroying the world. Consumerism and ego-driven things, basically. Do I need to point to the man in the Oval Office who can't sleep at night? That reminds you of this joke. So, this woman goes to the doctor. She's got a carrot stuck in one ear, a piece of celery in the other, a cherry tomato up one nostril, and a pea sticking out the other. She says, "Oh, doctor, I don't feel so good. Any idea what's wrong with me?" The doctor looks at her and says, "Well, for one thing, you're not eating right." Well, that joke wasn't to prove my point. It was just a joke.
She's got more people. Don't encourage her. Call them at 586-1033.
585.
585 and view, express your opinions.
Or tell a better joke. Okay, do you want any more philosophizing? So I'm sure we all have, well, want it or not, here it comes. So I'm sure we all have these moments where we wonder how to live a more meaningful life. We look around at our friends and neighbors. Are they fulfilled? Sometimes we look at what we're doing and we judge ourselves harshly. Yeah, take deposits to the redemption center, make some change, because a manufacturer should pay for that disposable packaging they're making. Ride my bike, haul trash, help a friend move, work in the garden, go to a surge meeting, say hi to the ducks and chickens, bake me and the housemates salvaged potatoes in the sun oven. It sounds like a good life. It is. Stand in the shade of the rail trail, straddling my bicycle, and write this. It's a good life, but sometimes it feels small. I could do more. I could think bigger. How do people do it? People who think big picture and are able to coordinate things and people and make wise decisions under pressure and communicate well? Is it a personality thing? How can I challenge myself in that direction? How can we all challenge ourselves in that direction? Assuming our intentions are good. And I'm sure everyone who listens to Out There has good intentions.
They better rule one.
Okay, that's it for this episode of Philosophizing, except that it reminds me of the new Sojourner Truth School for Social Change Leadership, which just started in the Northampton area this spring, I think, after the latest election. Here's a little quote about the Sojourner Truth School. Our sole focus is teaching and training, Our classes are designed to meet the needs of climate change activists, labor organizers, aspiring political candidates, those considering civil disobedience, people of faith seeking to express their outrage, folks involved in refugee and resettlement work, members of the LGBTQ community, people active in the Black Lives Matter movement, writers and artists who want to use their talents to create change, young people and seniors seeking a way to be active or to be active again. Check out their website, truthschool.org, for a class schedule or to register. And the classes are free. All right, it's time for a song. Let's, how about playing the Youngbloods?
Love is but a song we sing, fears we will die. You can make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may not know why.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother.
Welcome back to Out There.
Wake up. Grooving.
Next, I am going to play this interview with Tina, who is the woman I sat next to on the bus going from Durham, North Carolina, up to Richmond, Virginia last week.
It's not her fault people have cats.
And I know. She works for Nestle Purina in King William County, Virginia, outside of Richmond. And I hope the sound quality is okay on this. She had a really bad cold, and so her voice was kind of going in and out. But there it is.
I'm talking with Tina here on the bus. Tina, can you tell me a little bit about your work? Like, where do you work?
I work at Purina, Nestle Purina in King William County, Virginia.
How long have you been working there?
About a year and a half now.
So I wanted to interview you because my coworkers and I were always talking about how cat litter, like how much we don't like hauling cat litter, clay cat litter. We're on the receiving end of the poopy stuff, but you're on the creating end of, one stage in the system of it. What is your role in the cat litter industry?
Well, we work the lines, the bags, we work the containers of cat litter. It's just on the line work. It's hard, 12-hour shifts. They have 12-hour shifts, and it's just a line that you work on. The buckets come through, you make sure the buckets are even. Make sure the cat litter goes in all three of the buckets. And I think they do 48 buckets per 2 minutes.
Is there hoppers or something that are like filling the buckets? Mm-hmm. And then you're checking them and moving them as they move on down the line?
On the line, and we make sure that the buckets are straight. They go in. And
you were saying it's a little dusty?
Very dusty, very dirty.
Do you wear masks, or how do you deal with the dust?
Yes, we have to wear masks. Actually, we have, they call it PPEs, personal protective equipment. It's consists of earplugs, because it's so noisy, and face masks, hard hats, vests, and boots, and steel-toe boots.
So, wait, what do you wear? Like, you just have, like, work clothes that live at work? Or do you have to come home in dirty clothes and wash lots of clothes, or what?
Well, actually, Purina's very good. We have showers in our lockers, in our locker rooms, and we can shower.
So you were saying that the people from Switzerland, Nestle, Switzerland, whatever, came recently. How did they change? What happened? How did they change the work demands?
They just came to see how it was going, because some of the equipment used to break down. So they came and they fixed a lot of it, and now it's more, even more production. They want more production on the lines.
You're saying that it was 30 buckets a minute that you had to.
You're somewhere around 30 something buckets.
But it was just up.
They increased it. Yeah.
Oh, every 2 minutes, you said. Like, now it's 48 every 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. They increased it now to get more production.
How is that possible to go from 30 buckets every 2 minutes to 48 buckets every 2 minutes?
It's faster. It's just the buckets move faster.
Okay.
And that's how it is. Just the buckets, just they come quicker, and we have to move faster.
Is it more tiresome?
Yeah, you're on your feet 12 hours. 12 hours. You get 12-hour shifts, but it's good. Because the company is real good. They give you lunch, you know, and you have, like, say you work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, you're off. And then you come back and work another 3 days, then you get 2 days off, then you work 2 days and get 3 days off. So they don't kill you.
Yeah, and you were able to get a couple weeks off for vacation to go see your daughter in Atlanta?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
How often do you get vacation time?
Well, I just really basically started, so this is my first vacation.
You said you started a couple of years ago?
One and a half, about a year and a half ago.
And your husband works there too?
Oh, unfortunately. Never work with your mate.
Why you say that?
Because, you know, you bring the drama. It's always something he has to say that from the house he brings it to the job.
You said you've been together like 29 years.
I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it's about We met in 89, the summer of 89, so I guess that people can do the math. So that would be how long? 28? What do you think, 28?
How long does it seem like?
1,000. We live together and we work together. But I guess it's okay.
Anything else you want to add?
No.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh,
how much do they pay you?
The line they start you at $14 an hour, and then it goes up. You get your raise. You get a raise every I think 6 months or every year or something. I know you get a raise. Sometimes they just give you a raise. It pops up. You wouldn't know. So,
any idea how long people usually stay on the line? How long can a person last there without their body wearing out or them just totally burning? Well,
people come and go, but I've known people there for 7, 10, 12 years. Yeah.
Any idea how long you might be there?
Well, I'm 50 now. Hopefully I'll retire from there because I don't want to go anywhere else.
How about health insurance?
It's good. The insurance is good. It's beautiful benefits.
What did you do before that?
Burger King. Uh-huh. I worked at Burger King. Well, I worked at Burger King before Burger King. I worked at Food Lion. That was when I came down from New York. And living in a rural town, you know, you get what you can get till you get a car. So I started off at Food Lion and then went to Burger King and then I went to Purina.
What is your favorite job of the ones that you've had? Like
the one I have now.
Yeah.
I don't like food service business. It's too hot. Yeah, it's too hot to work in behind. Well, and about that, they need to start raising. Because I was only getting $7.25, but it was independently.
Wait, how much were you getting?
$7.25 an hour at Burger King. And they say that it's a kid's job, and it's not true. Because there's so many people struggling. That's grown people older than me. I know a lady, 56, that works there. And she just can't find anywhere else to go. So we have to take what we can get. So it's so wrong because they say, oh, Burger King and McDonald's is a kid's job, but it's not because there's so much entails in it that they should raise it. They should raise the minimum wage on those fast food services to at least 15 an hour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They really should.
Fight for 15.
Mm-hmm. At least 10.
That was a Tina from outside of Richmond, Virginia, works for Nestle Purina. I met her on the bus last week when I was traveling. I really hope her cold has gotten better.
I think that's just from Gabby on the line. We had to talk a lot louder than the machine.
You just have to scream.
So she lost her voice.
Well, she'd actually been in Atlanta for the previous 2 weeks taking care of her grandkids. You know how she told me she got a cold?
Screaming at the kids.
Well, that, perhaps, but she also said that her daughter kept it so cold with the air conditioning. She thinks she got it from too much air conditioning. She said her daughter kept it so cold that she would end up turning on the heat. Anyway, I'm going to play a song. This is for Tina.
Another one to do. We get by, have a bit.
welcome back to Out There. That was Warren Zevon. Okay, so here's another essay I have that I wrote called Remote Control Life, Drones On. All right, so the other morning I was working downtown emptying trash barrels on Main Street. I had the bicycle and trailer double parked alongside a big SUV in front of a popular coffee joint while I was on the sidewalk pulling the bag of trash out of a public barrel. Since it was morning rush hour with a lot of people parking and unparking, going to and from the coffee shop, I was on alert in case the person who I was blocking in came out to their car to leave. I was ready to move my bike and trailer in an instant, not just out of politeness and respect for the law, but also because...
concern of your bike.
Yeah, I didn't want my bike to get run over by unsuspecting motorists. Well, it's happened before. Like, yeah. the way the bike lies on the ground in front of the trailer, it's hard to see from behind a dashboard.
I had a woman pulling out today, and I was there with my bucket and just letting her know that I was there because she had a garage kind of blocking her way. She's backing out onto Market Street.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, my front tire goes, and then I'm mm-hmm. like... it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah, I've only ever gotten my front wheel run over, and sometimes my handlebars or the entire bike and trailer pushed backwards by the car's bumper. But fortunately, I've never gotten my bike destroyed yet, knock on wood. Anyway, so
here stay tuned.
Yeah, you could run over it, and I'll talk about it on the radio. So... here I am on hyper alert, one eye on the trash barrel I'm emptying, and one eye keeping watch for any movement of people through their cars or of parked cars themselves, because sometimes there's people in them, but I can't see through the glass to tell. So I'm emptying this barrel, and the big SUV in front of me that I have pinned in with my bike and trailer, suddenly the running lights flash on, and it startles me because I had thought the car was empty and I hadn't seen the driver get in. I dropped the barrel I was working on, and I took a step towards my bike. But then I realized, wait, there isn't anyone in that car. Ah, friggin' remote control. Ah.
You want to get into a cold car. Imagine if we had remote control seat warmers on the bikes. Warm up the gears.
It's summertime. This is a summer story.
But okay, so have, like, a cool seat. A warm seat in the winter and a cool seat in the summer. So
Dwayne.
Just, what? You said
freaking
innovation.
Remote control. I want some human contact. I want to be able to see my townspeople, look them in the eye. I want to be able to watch their physical movements to get a sense of what they might do next. But no. Buttons and signals from far away make machines move, make the lights go on, make sudden noises. Where are the people? One day I was walking around town with a surge friend knocking on doors on Orchard Street, inviting people to have conversations about racism and to put Black Lives Matter signs in their yard or window. One door we came up to had an unusual-looking lock. We stepped up on the porch. Carol and I decided on our scripts and rang the doorbell. Now, in most cases, someone would come to the door, or there would be no answer at all. But in this case, there was a speaker system, and a man's voice said, "Hello?" Hello, we said. We weren't quite sure if it was going to work to have a discussion about racism through a speaker system with someone we couldn't see. We hoped he would come out. Oh, wait, yeah. So he said, "Hello," he said again. So I looked at Carol, and she looked at me, and we went for it. "Hi, we're from Surge, showing up for racial justice, and we were wondering if you had a minute to talk about racism. Where are you? Oh, you're at my house. I'm sorry, I can't talk right now. I'm actually driving down the freeway."
You put it on speakerphone, buddy. You got to listen to what we got to say now.
No, we were going to listen. You knock on doors to listen to people, not to spiel.
Oh, they just
when it
have...
comes to talking about racism. Except for the radio show. I can't just like sit here and have a quiet radio show and say, "I'm listening, talk to me."
Yeah, but I mean, these home security systems now, they got things all set up so you can... sit in your office and check on your dog.
I know. Like, yeah.
Or cat.
I know.
Cat.
Like, Carol and I were both really kind of like disoriented. Like, how can you answer your doorbell if you're not even home? Or how can you start your car if you're not even in sight? How is it that if you have tech problems with your TV, you call for help and are talking with someone in India? Where do we live anyway? Do we live in our heads or on the earth? Or in our electronic devices? Or in our communities? I remember, Dwayne, I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, remote-controlled cars were hitting the toy market.
Never had one. All I had was one of them Hot Wheels that had like a plastic strip that you put in there, and you pull it real fast, and this wheel spins around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they take off.
Yeah.
And they crash them up.
Well, like in the, I don't know if it was like the 80s, but the remote-controlled cars were like the rage. Like everyone wanted one. It was so cool. Like you could make the car go wherever you wanted without even pushing it. You could steer, speed it up, slow it down. You could surprise your friends by making it zoom around their feet in the living room. It was like magic. Wave your wand and things would happen. You didn't have to touch anything anymore. Don't they have remote control dolls? I mean, I thought the point of dolls was so you could learn to be affectionate and compassionate and imagine what conversations you might have together.
Not with Betsy Wetsy.
I don't know about Betsy Wetsy. Is that one that you played with?
No, that's one I seen on TV. I used to watch cartoons, and they plugged toys, and this one was like, wet her pants. Like, oh, boy. That's what I want.
That reminds me, did you hear about the new doctor doll?
No, Ruthie, tell me.
It operates on batteries. Anyway, so when remote-controlled cars came out...
You can call it 585-1033 and put an end to this madness.
So when remote-controlled cars came out, I remember wondering if it would ever be possible to fly airplanes with remote control. Now the remote-controlled cars are life-sized. That's a funny term, life-sized. There's no life in them. They're driverless. And the remote-controlled airplanes are death-sized, a.k.a. drones dropping bombs on defenseless people, plants, and animals. Perhaps the impersonalism is larger than life. I don't like to see machines moving around us without being able to tell who's manipulating them. Like, what if the machine is doing something I don't like? How can I talk to the person in control? When someone gets a bomb dropped on them in Afghanistan and they dial 911, will they get a call center in India? Or will their screams reach farther than a phone call anyway? A friend recently told me that millennials are having less sex than previous generations, and one suspected factor is because online entertainment draws them in more. I know people who, in a hypothetical situation, if they had to choose between losing the ability to have sex or losing the ability to run, they would choose losing the ability to run. So having sex is more important than running, and playing video games or watching movies is more important than having sex, then where does that leave us? Sitting at home watching TV, I guess. Well, maybe the upside is we're not reproducing as fast.
Yeah.
Okay, enough cynicism. Now I gotta play the piece from my niece about catching that fox. By the way, you're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey is also here in the studio. And this is my niece, Christina Moyer, from near Castlewood, Virginia, southwestern Virginia, from the Moyer family farm.
So, Christina, I heard you caught a fox with your bare hands. Like, what happened?
Well, something had been up eating my poultry several nights. I'd seen something, but I just had a really dim light, so I couldn't tell what it was. But whatever it was, it did not have much fear of me. So I'd be in the coop, and it would come, like, right up and be eating my chickens, my ducks, like right out the door.
You heard it? You saw it? You saw its eyes? Or how did you...
Yes, I would see its eyes and kind of, I got a glimpse of its body. But like I said, my light was so dim, I couldn't see more than about 10 feet. Mm-hmm. And then one day I heard our cows making an awful racket. So I went to go check it out, and they were kind of looking over the fence. So I said, well, I'll go over there and see what they're looking at. And there was a fox. And I'm like, well, this is what's been eating my chickens. So I said, well, I can't just let it run away. And it was just kind of sitting there with its head on the ground. I thought it was eating something. And I said, well, no, it's not. And I'm like, well, I can't just go grab this thing. What am I going to do? I can't let it run away. So I was wearing like a jumper and I had a t-shirt and capris underneath. So I unbuttoned the buttons as quick as I could. And I walked up
in one hand.
Yes.
Trying to keep it. Were you afraid it would run away?
Yes, I was. So I was kind of trying to hold my light on it. And then I thought it would start running when I threw my dress on it. I thought the feeling of something on it, but it didn't. It just stood there. And so I said, well, okay. So I reached out and I grabbed it on its back and then grabbed its tail and started running for the house as fast as I could. And then I went running inside and I was yelling, I caught a fox! I caught a fox! And my family was like, you what? And I'm like, really? And so they all came running around the corner and they were so surprised because I brought it in the kitchen. So, yeah, then we put it in the cage, and Dad and I took it to a natural area preserve, a wildlife refuge place, and let it go there. But
and then you went back out, and then what happened?
Well, and then I went back out, and I heard our dog barking. And so,
well, like, what time of night would you say it was by now?
It was maybe 12 o'clock by then. By the time we drove to the place and let it go and came back. And our dog was barking the kind of bark he barks when he smells an animal. And I realized he was sniffing through the fence in our garden. So I opened the gate and called him through. And he went off tracking it. And I ran off after him. And then there's a possum. And so he kind of pounced on it, I guess, and it played dead. And then he ran off. I said, this possum isn't dead. It's just playing dead. So I grabbed it by the tail and ran inside. It ran in the kitchen. I said, I caught another one. So then I did the poultry. And I went back out to milk the cows. And what do you think I saw but another set of eyes? And I'm like, well, that must be a cat. Because wild animals usually don't just get this close. And then I got a little closer. I said, wait. That's a raccoon, and it's walking straight towards me. This is kind of weird. It's almost like I'm dreaming. I just walk up to a fox and catch it, and I get a possum, and now he's a coon just walking straight towards me. But there's a fence I had to jump over to get there. When I jumped, that kind of startled it, and I thought I saw it run up a big cherry tree. So I went up the tree after it, and I looked all through that tree, and I couldn't find it anywhere. But I guess a fox and a possum is enough for a night anyway. I say that the dog helped me catch the possum and the cows helped me with the fox. I think the way it was acting, I'm thinking a cow probably kicked it or something because it was acting a little, like even when we were driving to the place and stuff, it's kind of had its head down some of the time, so.
Either way.
Yeah. I didn't have any help with the coon, so that wasn't successful.
So that was my niece, Christina Moyer, from southwestern Virginia, talking, well, whatever you heard she was talking about. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. So coming up on Saturday, this Saturday and every Saturday,
is the Bake Lab, 12 Northern Avenue.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, y
menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
Hey, this is Dwayne the dog. Rennie, tune in every Friday from 2 to 4 for My Generation. Rock with me through the 70s once again. Only on WXOJ 103.3 in Northampton.
Do you love Latin music? Then check out Ritmo Latino. Tune in to WXOJ on Sunday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm your host, Kat, and I'll be playing a mix of styles from around the world, old school to new. Listen for local talent and upcoming events in the Latino community. So finish out your weekend with Latin style, Ritmo Latino, Sunday, 6 to 7 p.m. here on WXOJLP 103.3 FM.
And here's a song from my niece, Christina.
Went out on a chilly night. He prayed for the moon to give him light, for many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh, he ran till he came to the farmer's pen. The ducks and the geese were kept there, and he said, a couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, a couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town. Oh, he grabbed the great goose by the neck. He threw a duck across his back, and he didn't mind the quack, quack, and the legs all dangling down. Oh, down, oh, down, oh, he didn't mind the quack, quack, and the legs all dangling down. Oh, well, the old gray woman jumped out of bed. Out of the window she popped her head, crying, John, John, the great goose is gone. The fox is on the town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, John, John, the great goose is gone, and the fox is on the town. Oh, till he came to his nice warm den, and there were the little ones, 8, 9, 10, saying, Daddy, Daddy, better go back again. It must be a mighty fine town, oh, town, oh, town, oh, Daddy, Daddy, go back again, for it must be a mighty fine town, oh. The fox and his wife, without any strife, they cut up the goose with a fork and a knife, and they never had such a supper in their life, and the little bones chewed on the bones, oh, bones, oh, bones, oh, they never had such a supper in their life, and the little bones chewed on the bones.
That was Nickel Creek. Yeah, yeah, this is the end of Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton. Thanks for listening. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeer.com/out there. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock.
Forbes Library offers free access to computers, and now they are equipped with tools to make them easier to use if you are blind or have low vision. When you come into Forbes Library, you will find computers with JAWS screen reading and magnification software installed. Trained library staff are available to get you started. These services were brought to you with federal funds provided by the Institute of Museum and Library Services and administered by the Massachusetts Board of Library Commissioners. Call 413-587-1012 to find out more.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Illinois recently passed a sweeping new energy law that includes a program to help low-income people tap the benefits of solar energy.
It will fund incentives for rooftop solar projects in low-income communities. It will fund community solar projects where the subscribers are low-income households. and it will fund incentives for public facilities and nonprofits that serve low-income families to install solar.
That's Juliana Pino, policy director at the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization in Chicago, a group that helped negotiate the policy. The program will boost the number of rooftop solar systems and create local jobs in these neighborhoods. It also calls for training programs to prepare people in low-income communities for jobs in the solar industry. It even includes incentives to hire vulnerable people.
There is a goal for at least 2,000 jobs to be created for persons with a criminal record or alumni of the foster care system.
So the law will address environmental and social issues.
We really believe that access to clean energy that provides living wage, work, and wealth building is something that should happen everywhere.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Under the Surface is a live talk show featuring guest interviews and in-depth conversations with everyday people like you and me who have something important to share, a unique wisdom that we don't even realize we have. Please join me, Amy Landau, on Valley Free Radio every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon.
The views and opinions expressed on WXOJLP are solely those of the original hosts of their respective programs. These views and opinions do not necessarily represent those of Valley Free Radio Incorporated, its volunteers, or any other hosts, guests, or programs on this station.